Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Yesterday, the world surpassed over 100 million confirmed cases of COVID. The United States is approaching 25 million cases, and over 422,000 people have died in the U.S. Almost 20 million people have received one dose of vaccination, and over 3 million people have received two doses. Yesterday, President Biden said the U.S. would purchase 200 million more doses and increase distribution to states starting next week. For the very first time, the federal government will actually tell states how many doses they will be receiving at least 3 weeks in advance. The president also said 100 million shots in 100 days is still the goal, but that is just a start. Here in California, over 2.5 million shots have been administered, which is 55% of the almost 5 million doses the state has received. This is according to the Los Angeles Times. California, unfortunately, has one of the worst vaccine rollouts in the country. People say that they've had to wait up to 5 hours on the phone just to get an appointment, while others say they have not heard from their providers. And what about those of us who don't have a provider? Well, we also got news that California is moving to an age-based system for vaccine priority. People over 65, healthcare, nursing home, and frontline essential workers will remain a top priority. And after they get vaccinated, the state will vaccinate based on age starting in mid-February. The state has launched an online appointment website. It's called My Turn. It's currently available for healthcare workers and those over 65 in Los Angeles and San Diego. And scheduling for other counties will be available soon. And then what's going on at the local level? After public outrage, San Francisco opened its first mass vaccination site at City College's main campus with the goal of reaching 10,000 people a day. The two other sites are at the Moscone Center and SF Market in the Bayview. If you live in San Francisco, you can sign up to get notified when it's your turn at sf.gov. And then there's another site, a very in-depth site called Vaccinate CA. It's a community-driven effort to help Californians get up-to-date verified information about the vaccine. The site is run by volunteers who work in the tech industry, and they became very frustrated because they could not find basic information. One more piece of important news. California Governor Gavin Newsom has lifted stay-at-home orders across the state. Cases are flattening in parts of the state, while ICU capacity is increasing in places like San Francisco. The California Nurses Association say the move puts patients, nurses, and healthcare workers at risk. The association is also expressing concern about the more contagious strain of the virus that has been identified in California. Well, joining us to talk about all of this is Dr. Peter Chin Hong, an infectious disease physician and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Hi, Dr. Chin Hong. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me on. My pleasure.
Well, there's so much news to talk about. Before we get into that, I just want to ask you, as a doctor who, you know, is just so concerned about what's going on and is really trying to make things better, how are you feeling now that we have a new administration in place? Just the fact that for the first time, the federal government is actually going to tell states how many doses they'll be receiving at least 3 weeks in advance.
That's amazing. I think increased transparency is something we were all hoping for, and I'm glad at least the beginnings of that are seeming to be put into place.
I mean, the changes that we're going to see with this administration are massive. Just the fact that actual scientists are able to do their jobs again. What are your thoughts, Dr. Chin Hong, about the changes that we will see in the coming months?
Yeah, so there are two main changes, I think, which seem really elementary, but we're almost a year into this pandemic, and we haven't had that until now. And those two changes from a broad 30,000-foot view are a national strategy and the alignment of science and politics, like you mentioned. So I think that with those two things, all of the other aspects fall under that, which is, thinking about distribution of reagents or masks or vaccination strategies, if we don't act in alignment, it's like 50 different countries. And that's why we were doomed all these last few months.
Right. And we're going to talk more about details in terms of why the vaccine rollout has been so slow in the state of California. There's so many questions around the vaccine, Dr. Chin Hong. We're getting a number of emails from people who are just so frustrated because they cannot get answers from their providers. So what are your thoughts about how that will change in the coming weeks?
Well, I think that, you know, what we're hoping for in the coming weeks is just, apart from increased transparency and increased allocation. So I think not only are Pfizer and Moderna going to step up production, and I think President Biden has encouraged them to do that, but we're really fortunate to see J&J coming down the pipeline. There's AstraZeneca, whose data is still being reviewed by the FDA. So there are a lot more options. These other options are going to be more portable and easier to get. For the example of J&J, it's just going to be one shot. So I think this will all jumpstart further the vaccine rollout and hopefully result in fewer frustrations. I think the big issue with our vaccination rollout so far in California has been lack of expectation setting. I think we are promised one thing and then you go and try to do it and you can't do it. And that leads to a lot of frustration and people staying on call on the line for hours. And then, you know, you say you're going to do it one way and then you shift into how you're going to vaccinate people. And it's done in very different ways all across the state. So it's almost like you have to be an entrepreneur to go and get your vaccine or to go and camp out and wait for the end of the day when they have leftovers.
Right, exactly. We've heard stories about that. We're also hearing stories about people actually flying to other states to get the vaccine. And it's also difficult for people who do not have internet access. Because SFGov, for example, in San Francisco allows you to get notified. I mentioned the Vaccinate CA site, which is a really great in-depth site that was put up by volunteers. You can find links at yourcallradio.org. Dr. Chin Hong, what about those who don't have internet access? You know, elders living alone at home. How are we going to get this information to them?
That has been very tough. We saw that digital divide in the early days when people had to sort of go on an app to schedule testing for COVID. And luckily that's improved with inroads into, you know, hard hit communities, particularly. I think with the Biden administration, health equity, task force, they've already mentioned what they're going to do to try and, help with that digital divide. And that includes mobile vans, vaccinations, and other interventions like that. So I think you'll see that coming down the pipeline. You know, I was on a talk last week with Dr. Nunez, and who's the head of this task force, and I can tell you that she's really committed to this. So I think hold tight. I know it's hard to hold tight, but I think that changes are going to come. But right now, it doesn't change the frustration that many people are feeling.
We're also getting a lot of emails from people who say they don't have providers. So in that case, what do they do? Where should they turn? Because we have gotten word that some pharmacies will offer the vaccine. But what about people who just don't have a provider? Like they're not a patient of Kaiser. They're not a patient of Sutter, for example.
And that's the hard part right now, because right now in the Bay Area anyway, it seems that vaccinations are most efficiently given by system. And it was just originally, you know, that's, again, it's like diagnostic tests all over again, because in the beginning with diagnostic tests, it was almost easier to get it within a system. You went to the hospital or you had the system that you went to and they tested you. And then later on, the city got in to a more well-oiled machinery of a testing site. I think we'll see the same with vaccination as well. But right now, it's just a sputtering of a beginning. So I don't have any easy answers right now, but I think that things will get smoother as time goes on.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong is an infectious disease physician and professor of medicine at UC San Francisco. If you have any questions about the vaccine rollout, I mean, there's so much going on right now with the stay-at-home orders lifted, the websites that are popping up. Supervisor Matt Haney in San Francisco has been holding hearings to try to get information about what's going on in San Francisco. So if you have any questions or comments about these issues, we'd love to hear from you. 866-798-8255. 866-798-8255. You can also tweet us at Your Call Radio or email yourcall@kalw.org. Dr. Chin Hong, now that a lot of people have received this vaccine, according to the CDC, only 10 out of 4 million vaccinated with the Moderna vaccine have had allergic reactions. What else can you tell us about the data so far?
Yeah, so, I mean, like you said, the data shows that the serious allergic type reactions that we were fearing is not that common. So per million, it seems that about 11 per million in the Pfizer and about 2.5 per million in the Moderna vaccine. And I would predict that with the new vaccines coming on the pipeline, like AstraZeneca and J&J and Novavax, we won't be seeing many of these allergic type reactions. So I think, you know, the future is definitely good in that respect. But in the big picture, very, very rare. Nobody died. And that's one piece. The other piece is continued thoughts or thinking about the efficacy rates. And, you know, the whole reason why the UK went for let's vaccinate everyone with at least one shot is because they analyzed the data starting from day 10 rather than day 0 or day 7 to 10. And the reason why they looked at that data that way is that they, you know, they took into consideration anybody who got COVID by day 7 to 10 might have been exposed before they even got the vaccine. So when you look at it that way, it seems that after the first shot, you're getting sort of like 80 to 90% efficacy. But we don't know how long one shot would last. So hence the second shot is better to make sure you get that 90, 95% and above, but also that you get durable protection that would last for several years. So that's the second piece of information. The third is really vaccine efficacy and the variants. So we've seen data from Pfizer and now from Moderna that their vaccines work against at least the UK variant and for the Moderna's case, for sure, the South African variant. In general, I would be surprised if these vaccines don't work against these current variants. I think the future variants may pose another problem, but right now I think, you know, I'm confident that these vaccines will cover the variants that we have.
How long will it take to get that information?
About the new variants?
Yes, and how effective the vaccines are with the new variants.
So I think that right now we have laboratory studies that show that they're effective, but of course we'll have data from the population to see if people who've gotten the vaccines get COVID, and if they get COVID with something that's one of the variants. So right now we have the first study from a population-based level of the efficacy of vaccines on a countrywide level, and that's from Israel. And they showed that of 128,000 Israelis vaccinated so far, only 20 of them got COVID, which is like a, you know, only 0.01% of folks who got the vaccine got that COVID, which is even better than the trials. So again, people will look for what we call breakthrough infections. And if they seem to be with the variants, that will give us some ideas as well. So far, so good. I'm feeling confident.
The New York Times ran a piece recently about booster shots. As a virus grows stealthier, vaccine makers reconsider battle plans. And it says vaccines by Moderna and Pfizer effectively protect recipients, but in a worrying sign, they are slightly less effective against a variant found in South Africa.
Yeah, so it's still going to be, you know, we may, even if it's six times less antibodies, that you produce is still going to be very effective when you speak to immunologists and virologists, because we just create so many antibodies with these vaccines. And with Moderna and Pfizer's vaccine, they make the entire spike protein and present that to the body. So there's different aspects of the spike protein. So you develop a repertoire of antibodies. Somebody told me once it's like a firing squad of 1,000 guns. So if you take out one gun, you still have 999. So the bottom line is, I still think, and many people still think, the vaccines will be effective against these variants. I think the other interesting thing about vaccines is that these mRNA vaccines are so amazing because they just can take the code for that message of the protein, of the spike protein, those things sticking up from COVID. And if it changes, they can just take the code for the new spike protein and just put it in the vaccine. It's almost like cutting and pasting. And in that way, the manufacturers, both Pfizer and Moderna, believe that even in the unlikely situation we get a COVID that the current vaccines don't work against, they can simply reprogram that vaccine in a matter of weeks. Of course, we'll have to deal with production and distribution all over again if that's the case.
There are also questions about whether people who get vaccinated can get COVID and spread COVID without knowing it. The other question is, how long will the vaccine last? When do you think we'll have answers to those questions?
So I think let's take each one of those questions one by one. So the idea of COVID vaccines not preventing transmission is just not data saying that it results in transmission, but the absence of data showing that it, conclusive data showing that it doesn't. There's no reason to think that it won't. It's just that we don't have the data yet. And what's happening right now is that the original tens of thousands of people in the vaccine trials are currently being followed. And, their circle of influence are going to be followed too. So I think there'll be sort of network analyses done where the people got vaccinated and they have a head start from the community of about 6 to 12 months. They've been swabbed every, few months or so and looking at viral load and things like that. So I think that group will give us information. But, I think that fear comes from polio vaccines, because there was an injectable polio vaccine and an oral that people might remember with a sugar cube. But the one that's oral prevents transmission in the gut and the stool, but if you get an injectable polio vaccine, you can still potentially transmit polio in the sewage. So that's where that thinking comes from. But I think any vaccine that decreases viral load will prevent transmission. We just don't know that yet. But hopefully in a few months, we'll be able to see that original group of folks. With the second question, how long it lasts, again, we're still lucky to have these volunteers, who tens of thousands of people who got the vaccine in the trials before we did. They continue to be followed, so their antibody levels are going to be checked. So as soon as their antibody levels start to go down, it will be the sign that the community would need a booster shot. So right now, all things being, going well, no sign yet of those antibodies going down. And many people think that in most people in the community, once you get the vaccine, it should last for years, just based on the way the COVID is. Of course, granted that no major strains have come up, or strain differences. So when you get a bunch of variants, they become a different strain, and a different strain is what you may need a new vaccine booster against.
Let's talk about masks for a minute. There was an op-ed in the Washington Post recently called "Everyone Should Be Wearing N95 Masks Now." It was written by Joseph Allen, associate professor and director of the Healthy Buildings Program at Harvard University's School of Public Health. And he pointed out that This number is really incredible. We should be grateful for the bakers and the cooks whose risk of death rose more than 50% under COVID, for the house cleaners and the truck drivers who saw a 30% increase in death risk, shipping clerks up more than 40%. And he's saying that we should wear, if we can get our hands on it, an N95 or similar mask, and then put a cloth mask over that. And this has been getting a lot more attention in the last week, Dr. Chin Hong. What are your thoughts on this?
I think it varies on the situation. For example, I wouldn't go outdoor dining in a low-risk area and wear two masks. I think that's way overkill. But for certain professions, and I've always worried about this from the beginning of the pandemic, you know, looking at people in the kitchen, people who are, you know, utility workers who go into people's homes to check the meters, those are, and then it's a poorly ventilated area. I worry about those people. I think in those settings, when you're indoors in a cramped Victorian flat in San Francisco and you are coming from the outside, you work for Comcast and you're going into somebody's home and you're there for a while, that is probably a place where it would not be unreasonable to wear to have an extra layer of protection. For most intents and purposes, you're going to Safeway, you're darting in and out, you're keeping your mask on. I'm not sure that the juice is worth the squeeze, because N95 is kind of suffocating, to tell you the truth. It smells a little bit weird. It has that sort of like weird shape, and you can't really put a lot of bling on N95. But you know, I think stepping back, it just depends on the context. I don't think it's something that we should all take wholesale and like go around and try to source N95 for just walking around in the street. But certain occupations for sure, and definitely indoor settings that might be more risky.
Right. I mean, that's just really an incredible statistic that bakers and cooks, their risk of death rose more than 50%. Dr. Chin Hong, I also wanted to ask you about the state's decision to lift the stay-at-home orders across the state. And I mean, this is such a tough one because small businesses, I mean, people who own their own business, they're just struggling so much across the board. And so they need to get back to work. They need to open their business. We know that. At the same time, the California Nurses Association says this puts patients, nurses, and healthcare workers at risk. So what are your thoughts on this?
Yeah, so you mean the my thinking about having people go back to work, you mean?
Just lifting the stay-at-home order. Come Thursday, I just got a text from the salon down the street, and it said, if you want to get your nails done, come on down. We're going to be open again. So, you know, a number of businesses are planning to open tomorrow across the state.
Yeah, so again, there's that balance between people's economy and lives that have been upended and sort of like getting COVID and overrunning hospitals. I think in the Bay Area, we're actually doing pretty well. Our test positivity rate is actually about half that of the state, which is about 5% in San Francisco, for example, versus like, 7-8%. And, you know, I think our mask wearing culture in the Bay Area is pretty decent and our numbers look pretty good. So in that setting, and then healthcare workers have been all vaccinated, hopefully by now, or many of them have been. What I predict is, you know, it is that balance. And I think as long as we're willing to be flexible and to turn back the clock, that's the low risk areas. We're not going to jump into, you know, yellow or orange, but to start with purple and to see if we can, you know, it requires all of us taking personal responsibility to sort of like dip our toes into that life that we aspired to pre-COVID. And just for people, jobs and economy, given the risk benefit right now, I think it might be worth it in Northern California. In Southern California, I'm a little bit more nervous, but hopefully things will be okay there as well.
Right. We'll plan to do a show with someone in Southern California because the numbers there are just so, so high and it's so different from the Bay Area. Before we let you go, Dr. Chin Hong, I wanted to ask you how you're looking at this from a global perspective. There was an interesting story in the Financial Times called Vaccines Have Been Oversold as the Pandemic Exit Strategy. And in the piece, Tulio de Oliveira, a bioinformatician at the University of KwaZulu-Natal, who has co-authored a paper on the South African variant, said that if regions with raging transmissions act as breeding grounds for resistant variants and then fail to control spread, that will prolong the pandemic. He says that Taiwan, China, Australia, and New Zealand, which have chased elimination, are the role models to follow. He said this should be a wake-up call for all of us to control transmission, not just in our own regions, but globally. The virus will keep outsmarting us if we don't take it very seriously. And he just talked about, yes, vaccinating is so important, but we need fast testing, contact tracing, quarantine, and isolation. He said that vaccination must go hand in hand with virus suppression, not become a substitute for it. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, definitely. So I think in terms of reopening the global economy, there's no way we can do it in our current model. We are too regional, and we're not focusing on elimination, like you said, even with vaccines, and it's no panacea. Vaccines are no panacea for sure. But the U.S. until recently hadn't been involved in COVAX, which would fund the world's access to vaccines. And until we do think globally and rejoin the WHO's efforts, we're going to be doomed.
Dr. Peter Chin Hong is an infectious disease physician and professor of medicine at the University of California, San Francisco. Dr. Chin Hong, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. Coming up after a quick break, we will speak with Anna Maria Berry Jester, a senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News, and we will find out what exactly is happening in California and why the rollout has been so slow. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Of California's 40 million residents, just over 5% have received at least one dose of the vaccine. Just 1% have received a second dose. California ranks 44th in the country when it comes to vaccines. Older Californians are complaining about waiting on hold with their providers for hours. Some say they haven't heard from their providers at all. And again, yesterday, California officials said it would prioritize the vaccine rollout by age, not occupation. Joining us with the latest is Anna Maria Berry Jester, senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News and California Healthline. Anna Maria covers public health, and her latest piece is called California Counties Flying the Plane as We Build It in a Plotting Vaccine Rollout. You can read it at yourcallradio.org. Hi, Anna Maria. Thank you so much for joining us again.
Hi, Rose. Thanks for having me.
Well, great to have you. It seems like California is ramping up vaccination in the last week or so, but there have been a lot of problems. Why is California ranking 44th in the country? What explains that?
Yeah, there's a lot going on behind those numbers. The pace has really picked up in the last few days and really the last week or two, as you kind of said. But there's a bunch of things that happened. So first of all, the initial weeks of the rollout were very slow in California. The way counties explained it to me is that they essentially got their marching orders on who was supposed to be vaccinated first, just about the same time they were supposed to start vaccinating, only about a week lead time from when the vaccine started arriving. So they really were trying to build out the entire infrastructure of vaccinating in a way, just as they were getting the first vaccine. So that really slowed things down. The other thing, there's a couple of things. So one is that a lot of counties have expressed that the data is probably a little bit incorrect in California to a more extreme degree than other states. We have such a massive number of people here, and California has often had huge problems with data collection. And so they're reporting all sorts of things that they think are slowing down the numbers. So it may be that we're doing a little bit better than the state numbers portray. That said, it has definitely been very slow. And, you know, there's California often has this problem. We're a really big state. A lot of people, we have a very fragmented public health system. Some states, you know, the whole thing operation is being run by the state, and that sort of speeds things up and makes things a little bit more even across areas, unlike California.
And yesterday, President Biden talked about increasing overall vaccination distribution. And he said that the number of vaccines sent to a state obviously depends on how big the state is. And for the very first time, there is going to be transparency at the federal level. And so states are going to find out how many doses they will be receiving at least 3 weeks in advance. How do you think this will change what happens on the ground in California?
Counties say this is a really big deal. So, for example, they previously have not known how many vaccine doses they were going to have arrive until just days before they came. That makes it really challenging to set up things like a mass vaccination clinic. The other thing they're really worried about is setting up appointments and then having to cancel on people because the vaccines don't arrive. They're worried that that will, you know, create more public mistrust and cause a lot of logistical issues for people who are, you know, trying to schedule appointments and that kind of thing. So they've been really hesitant to do that. Just knowing how many vaccines will arrive each week, they say, really allows them to have a much more, you know, fine-tuned operation that can get more people vaccinated.
We had a caller and the caller just left. Well, if you have a call, if you have any questions, if you have experiences you'd like to share, if you have been trying to get information about when you can get the vaccine and where to go, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. You can also email your call at kalw.org. I also wanted to ask you about a piece that ran in the AP on January 22nd by Don Thompson called California Keeps Key Virus Data Out of Public Sight. He writes that Governor Newsom has from the start said his policy decisions would be driven by data, but with the state starting to emerge from its worst surge, his administration will not disclose key information that will help determine when his latest stay-at-home order is lifted. State health officials say they rely on a complex set of measurements that would confuse and potentially mislead the public. Dr. Lee Riley, chair of the UC Berkeley School of Public Health, said there is more uncertainty created by not releasing the data that only the state has access to. Can you tell us more about this?
Yeah, in the last couple of days, the state has released a little bit more information about how they're making these projections. But the background to this is that there's the ICU capacity available now, and then there are projections going forward. And the state says it has been using those projections to determine whether or not areas could open. And there was a real mismatch for several weeks where the Sacramento area was allowed to open, the Bay Area was closed, even though it didn't necessarily appear that that went along with what the current available ICU capacity was. And the state was saying that their projections allowed this, but they wouldn't release information about how those projections were being made. Some information was provided this week. It's a little unclear to me if it's the entire formula for how the projections are made. I will say that there's a lot of people expressing frustration with the state for its lack of transparency. And this similarly, California, I went through and looked at the data in all 50 states, and all but a handful of states are releasing a lot more information about how well they're doing on vaccines, whether it's providing information by county or by race or by age. And California right now just has this blunt number of, you know, nearly 2.6 million vaccines administered, but not a lot of information about where those vaccines are happening or who's getting them.
Well, we have a question from a listener about this. So let's go to Martin in San Francisco. Hi, Martin. Welcome to the show.
This is Brad, B-R-A-D. Thank
you. Oh, hi, Brad.
That's okay. I'm glad I finally had a chance to speak here. So what I wanted to say is that one of the most underutilized resources that we have, which I do not understand, is the Postal Service. We're going to every house every day, 6 days a week, and Amazon on Sunday. So delivery of information, of products, they aren't being labeled as essential workers. When internet commerce would collapse without the Postal Service, FedEx, UPS depend on them. They're in offices where they're not being handled properly because they're all in there at the same time, crowded. So they're in an enclosed area, and then they're out on the street dealing with the public, where the public could have the virus. And even though it doesn't staff on the surface, they're handing them things. They're handing them mail, letters. They're handing them packages. So If they go out, if they're not used, the internet commerce, in fact, would collapse. We have no way to deliver to people's houses if they had to shelter in place or get their food stuff. And for information, if a pill comes out, a pill form or oral form that needs to be distributed immediately, you drop it off, and the next day, it's in people's hands. So
right.
I don't understand why they're being put at the end of the line in terms of vaccination and why they're not being utilized, this great tool that we have.
Brad, so are postal workers being put at the end of the line? Where are you getting that information?
Well, they were down to B tier two, then they got dumped up to B tier, back up to up the tier B tier one. But my understanding is they're getting bumped back down to B tier two when they should be over at 1A.
Well. Thank you for the call. What can you tell us about this, Anna Maria? Do you know where postal workers are when it comes to vaccine priority?
I'm not 100% sure if they fall in the category of that is up for priority with 65 and up, but I think there's something kind of underlying what Brad's saying, which is how do we think about who to prioritize first, given the really limited supply? And so right now the approach is to try and reduce death and hospitalizations, but there's certainly a lot of people who wish that we would also prioritize people we need for functioning society and the people that we're asking to go out and take on a lot of risk by working day to day. I'm not 100% on where postal workers fall, though, in the current vaccine schedule, which is changing daily.
Right. Well, I just found a piece at govexec.com, and it says that postal service workers will be in the second group of people to receive the vaccine. And this is according to a federal advisory panel. This came out in late December. Postal Service employees are slated to be in phase 1B of vaccine distribution as part of 49 million individuals older than 75 or part of non-healthcare frontline essential workforce. So thank you for that call, Brad. You also brought up an idea about people who don't have internet access. Given that we get junk mail on a pretty regular basis, it seems like the Postal Service would be a great vehicle, you know, to send people information about how they can learn more about the vaccine, especially for people who don't have computers. So thank you for that. Since we brought up just how the prioritization list is changing, Anna Maria, what can you tell us about the announcement that came down yesterday that California would move to an age-based system instead of vaccinating priority groups by occupation?
Yeah, they've been saying this for most of the last couple of weeks, but it's still just there's a lot of confusion even among what they've said so far. And then also it is shifting a little bit. So basically the idea is that they want a couple of things to happen, that the whole state move together at the same time so that some counties aren't far ahead of where other counties are, which was happening. There were several counties that were starting to vaccinate people 65 and up or 75 and up, while other counties had just done a fraction of their healthcare workers. So the idea is to try and get everybody to move in concert. That's one thing. What they've said is that some of the groups that were initially in 1B, which you just referenced, this, you know, the next group after healthcare workers, which is so educators, childcare workers, food and farm workers, first responders, will join those in 65 and up in the priority. But then from there, it's going to be age-based is what they've said. But again, this has shifted several times. So I'm a little hesitant to declare anything because I don't want to cause more confusion. And I think confusion has been one of the biggest problems so far.
Right. We're getting a lot of emails from listeners who say, I don't have a provider. I'm not a patient of Kaiser or Sutter. And so what do I do? Because they're not getting any information.
This is such a key point, and it's exactly what the counties specifically have been warning about. So they are, you know, the public health departments are part of county infrastructure, and their task is to keep everybody in the community safe, right? And so they are tasked with making sure that things like everybody gets vaccinated. They are currently doing things like setting up mass vaccination sites, but the reality is, you know, private providers are a really good way to get vaccines to people who have health insurance or a private provider. They're not so great for vast groups of people, and there are many in California that don't regularly visit the doctor, maybe don't have a relationship with them. And so they are trying to fill in those gaps. And normally it's through something like vaccination sites. There's also what are called federally qualified health centers. So like what we might think of as a community clinic or something like that, that will be doing vaccinations for everyone.
All right, let's go back to a few callers and some people who are emailing. Let's hear next from Martin in San Francisco. Hi, Martin.
Hi. I'm just having real trouble getting clear information from Kaiser as to when I can get a shot. I have friends of mine that are younger than me. I'm 75, and they live in Brooklyn, and they've gotten their shots.
Well, Martin, have you been in touch with your provider?
Yes.
And did you actually talk to a person about setting up an appointment?
They won't schedule an appointment for me because they said they'll notify me.
They'll notify you. All right, stay on the line, Martin, in case you have a follow-up. Do you have any information for Martin, Anna Maria? I did see on social media when Kaiser first started opening appointments, people said that they were on hold for up to 5 hours on the phone to try to get an appointment.
Yeah, this is so tricky. I do know people who have gotten vaccinated 65 and up through Kaiser, and there were announcements that they were doing some vaccination for people 65 and up in the Bay Area. I yesterday got an email suggesting that they are focusing on 75 and up now, and it is a little unclear. It sounds like they have limited supply like everyone, but I think it is very confusing for people, and it's hard because the state is telling people to either talk to their provider or talk to their county. And both of those groups are kind of inundated and overwhelmed and don't have the supply really to meet the needs. So I think what they would ask is some patience, but I think it's also very confusing and understandably frustrating.
Do you have any tips for Martin and others like him in the same situation?
I think that it is correct to try and be proactive and reach out to providers yourself, but I'm not sure that that's going to be and like yield very satisfying results right now, just because I've heard from so many people who've waited hours on the phone or just been told, well, don't contact us, we'll contact you.
Well, Martin, I'm sorry you've had this experience and you just gave me an idea. What we'll do is, you know, every week, even if it's for 20 minutes, a segment, we'll bring on someone like Anna Maria, if she has the time, to just give you updates to let you know, okay, you know, there's more appointments happening. There's more vaccine in the state because we just need solid information. So thank you so much for calling, Martin. Let's go next to Howard in San Jose. Hi, Howard. Welcome to the show.
Hi there. Thanks for having me on. Now, I just want to preface my comment by saying I don't work in medicine or logistics or information technology, but I have also been very frustrated with the entire system of figuring out how to get an appointment or even know more information about the disease. And I was wondering, if the state wants to do this, why doesn't it already use the system that it has, in which it owns everybody's identification and allows for appointments through a website, and that's the DMV. Through the DMV, you already know how old everybody is, where they all live, heck, you even know how much they weigh. Like, you could use that information to figure out where people should go, and like I said, they already have a website that allows you to make appointments. So I guess I'm kind of frustrated about why we have to keep doing reinventing the wheel when we already have a massive infrastructure for this.
Thank you. It's a great point, Howard. What are your thoughts about that, Anna Maria? And related, just quickly, Bill wrote an email that said, I'm disappointed with what I see as poor planning for administration of the vaccine. This takes sufficient skilled personnel, facilities, and infrastructure. This takes advanced planning.
I think that a lot of people are frustrated, and it's very understandable. With the DMV, the tricky thing here is that we're talking about medical information, and so there does need to be some you have to be a little bit careful to make sure that you're maintaining medical privacy. I think that's part of the reason. There are also existing infrastructure, though, for doing vaccinations. Part of the problem is that we're the same people who need to be involved in this are the public health folks who are also doing testing, who are also doing contact tracing, who are also dealing with natural disasters. And it's just another layer. You know, at the end of the day, it is still the same people who have to be involved in all of these processes. And they're all doing everything right now. To your point, I think there are a lot of people are very frustrated. Why aren't we using more existing infrastructure? And I don't know that there's a good answer to that other than that we have an extremely fragmented health system that is not set up to do things from, you know, a community perspective like this.
Well, this is also very interesting. Some tech workers were frustrated because they could not find basic information. And so they put a call out and a number of people said, I want to help. And they put up a really incredible website called vaccinateca.com. And what they're doing is calling providers all over their state. There's like 250 of them calling providers up and down the state to find out the latest information. And so, for example, I just put in my zip code on this website, VaccinateCA, and the results are really interesting. For example, you're getting a lot of hospitals like UCSF, One Medical, and it says 75 years old and up. You must be a patient, but you can log on to your chart to schedule an appointment, and there's a link. City College of San Francisco, for example, 75 years old and up. There's a drive-through clinic. You have to have an appointment. Sutter, you've got to be a patient. Alta Bates. Here's another one that's really interesting. Safeway in El Cerrito, 65 years old and up. Vaccine appointments for this location are scheduled through the county website. Rite Aid in Orinda, 65 years old and up. Register at the Contra Costa Health website. So there's so much information on here, Anna Maria. And it looks like you might even be able to go to some pharmacies. A Safeway on Walnut Creek, 65 and up. You have to go sign up on the website. But this information is only available if you have access and you know about this particular site.
Yeah. Some of the crowdsourcing and the volunteer efforts are incredible. And we are in an emergency, so it's great to see people stepping up and volunteering. I'm a little concerned that that might make it appear that vaccines are available at those places, and I'm not sure that they are. I mean, It sort of changes hour to hour where there actually are vaccines available and where they're not. And then also, you know, what priority groups are happening. Also, which places are administering vaccines is changing on a pretty quick pace, like on a day-to-day basis as they get more and more providers online. But your other point is so true, that so much of this appointment making right now relies on the internet, especially if you want to score one of those limited spots, because waiting on the phone can, you know, get you behind in line while all those spots are taken online. And that is really tricky because we're also talking about groups of people who maybe are not as online, if you will, as other age groups. I'm very worried about some of these groups being left behind. The counties say that they're making efforts to try and reach out to homebound seniors, people in their communities that might not be able to either get to a vaccination site or get online to make an appointment. But I think we should all be very worried that there are groups of people that will be left behind.
Yes, and we are going to be here for those groups of people just to give you the latest information and to try to keep you up to date. We have an email from Sarah who says, anecdotally, a senior told me she called Kaiser, pressed the number assigned to COVID vaccine, was informed via a recording that no appointments were currently available. She called back, didn't press buttons, waited for a person to pick up, and got an appointment. You might try that. And then Steve writes in, I just got an email from Kaiser that vaccine is in short supply and they'll contact members 75 and older and advise them when to make appointments. Also, my wife works for Kaiser and they're working their tails off trying to get this effort organized. Thank you so much for that information, Steve. And thanks to your wife and all healthcare workers, because I know that there's just so much going on right now, and they are working so hard to get this information out to people. So it sounds like, Anna Maria, that at Kaiser anyway, the vaccine's in short supply, and they're going to reach out to people who are 75 and older.
Yeah, the vaccine is in short supply everywhere. And one of the things that public health officials were worried about is that opening up supposedly who qualified too soon would create this kind of frustration because they just don't have the supply to actually vaccinate anywhere near as many people as fall into the 65 and up category. And it could, you know, it'll be some weeks where the Biden administration has said they're going to be releasing 10 million doses a week for the next 3 weeks. And that is an increase from the supply that's been coming previously, but it's not dramatic enough to make it so that everyone 75 and up or even 65 and up in California can get vaccinated. And I think that unfortunately, one of the things is that there needs to be some patience. It's so tricky because you need to be proactive and try and get an appointment and make effort, but also it's going to probably lead to some disappointment for a while because the vaccine supply just is not there.
We have just about a minute left. Can you explain to us why is it that some places say that they're short of vaccines, but when you look at the state overall, 45% of available doses have not been used?
Yeah, there's a couple answers to that. So one is that a decent amount of supply has to be held in reserve for second doses. That's required by the state. It's 50% of the second doses need to be held on hand. So there's always going to be some amount that's not used. Of course, there's millions of vaccines in the numbers that you just cited that are not being held for second doses. Some of that is just sort of the, you know, over the stretch of a week, vaccines go into, go out at vaccination sites and that kind of thing. And unfortunately, because the state has not been forthcoming about where vaccines are and are not going out the door, it's a little bit tough to say. And I know that the counties have been very frustrated about this because they'll call and talk to a hospital and the hospital will say, we've used all our doses. But if you look at the information they have on the data portals, it looks like very few have been used. And so there's a lot of confusion still about what those numbers mean.
Well, Anna Maria, you're such a great reporter on these issues. And if you're up for it, we would love to have you back, you know, maybe every Wednesday for 15 minutes, just to give people updates, because there's just so many unanswered questions and confusion. You can think about it, but we'll definitely be in touch because
thanks
we'd love
so much
to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Thank you so much. Anna Maria Barry Jester is senior correspondent with Kaiser Health News and California Healthline. And you can find her pieces at yourcallradio.org. We will definitely have Anna Maria or another reporter back just to try to bring you information, because there is still so much confusion out there. And if you do have access to a computer, you can find all of the websites that we mentioned at yourcallradio.org, and be sure to spread the information. Thanks to Leah Cesarine for producing today's show. Thanks to Kevin Vance for keeping our studio running. And I hope you can join us tomorrow. We will talk about what it will take to hold big tech accountable for the spread of disinformation online. Experts say companies like Facebook and Twitter have enabled far-right extremism and dangerous lies for years, and it took an insurrection at the Capitol for them to suspend Donald Trump's account. After he was banned, social media platforms saw a 73% drop in election misinformation. So we'll talk about what regulations are needed. If you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can email yourcall@kalw.org. You can listen to past shows and sign up for our podcast at yourcallradio.org. Thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.